Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of Money Tree Investing Podcast. My name is Kirk Chisholm, and I'm going to be your host today. We're going to be talking about retirement. It's a big topic that affects a lot of people, especially baby boomers. So baby boomers in the audience, listen up, because this is a really important topic that you all need to know about. And it's not just as simply as digging into the numbers, but there's a lot more to it than that, that you're probably not going to read in your local Forbes article. So that's a lot of what we're going to be digging about into this episode today. So today we're going to be talking with Jack Phelps, the Relaxing Retirement Coach. He has a new book out called The Relaxing Retirement Formula. And we're going to dig into a little bit of what's going on in that book and how we can help you have a better retirement. But before we begin, are you looking for a better way to invest during market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses the time-tested principles of modern portfolio theory to help you manage your wealth and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to worry about what the market's doing on a day-to-day basis. Instead, Betterment allows you to use the stock market to consistently build wealth. For more information, visit moneytreepodcast.com/betterment. A lot of investors use Betterment, but it doesn't mean it's the right fit for you. Do your own research. Check out moneytreepodcast.com/betterment to see if Betterment is the right fit for you. So today we're talking with Jack Phelps. How's it going today, Jack?
Kirk, how are you? Great to be with you.
Glad to have you on board, because as we talked about earlier, this is a show about retirement, and it's a huge topic, so we're going to try to dig in as best we can and really hit, in my opinion, some of the more important parts about retirement that people should be considering. So Jack, for the listeners who don't know you, can you tell us a little about yourself and your background?
Sure. I've created and manage a business known as the Relaxing Retirement Coach. And all of this began for me about 30 years ago after I graduated college. The impetus for all of this is I was having a conversation with a gentleman at the time who happened to be a public school teacher like my dad. And back then, without realizing the impact that it had on me, he mentioned in passing that he would have jumped at the opportunity to take advantage of the discount that was currently being offered back then, not now, but back then, to prepay all 4 years of his son's tuition. And at the time, I could remember thinking, this guy's nuts. What made him believe that he could afford to do that? My parents never took a vacation for 26 years, and I can completely guarantee you that the last thing that we were ever talking about was how to prepay 4 years of a college tuition. So the comment by that retired school teacher back then is really what led me to begin our program that we currently run and for writing the book, The Relaxed Retirement Formula. And really what it all started is the research that we did back then identified that only a very small percentage of the public out there successfully retires to a same or an even better lifestyle, while, of course, the overwhelming majority do not. That struck me as really, really sad. So from that moment on, I immersed myself in studying what this little tiny percentage of Americans were doing differently than everybody else. Like most people, my first thought was pretty simple. Well, they just had more money. But what I've discovered over the last 30 years is that I was dead wrong. And I say that because I've worked with countless numbers of people who have a lot of money by most people's standards. And yet many of them, before they met us, lived their lives with a lot of anxiety and had a very, very tough time making the transition. What we've found out and discovered over the years is that one of the biggest challenges in anybody's life is to go from working and receiving a paycheck and saving money to no longer receiving that paycheck anymore. And then to make matters even more difficult, you have to begin spending the money that you've taken your entire life to save. One of the hardest things to do for those who have done the best job of saving is flipping the switch and spending the money. And the problem is that all of those years of discipline and saving are of no value to you now if you don't have the financial confidence to spend it. And what we discovered, of course, is that nobody's born with that confidence. They develop it. So my goal with our business and with writing the Relaxing Retirement Formula is to help those who have done the best job saving and accumulating, develop and maintain the incredible financial confidence that they need to be able to do everything that they want to do without having to worry about running out of money.
You raise a great point there, and I want to kind of harp on this a little bit because it's something that we see a lot of is that anxiety when people are retiring.
Yeah.
You know, that flipping of the switch, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
The question I would ask, I mean, your experience, obviously you have a formula behind this, which is great, but why does that happen? Why do people have so much anxiety around flipping this switch? Because it's got to be more than just they're not born with it. I mean, none of us are born with saving either. We learn to do that. So what's kind of behind that?
It's a really good question because I'm sure that most folks who are listening would say, well, geez, it should be no big deal, especially if they've accumulated enough money. Why are they uncomfortable with this? And I think there's multiple reasons, but the two biggies that we see, of course, financial. And the big financial one, you have to stop and remember that for all intents and purposes, the whole concept of retirement or being able to financially support yourself without income coming in from work has only been around for about 80 to 90 years in human history, aside from the Rockefellers and the Carnegies of the world and kings and queens. And so it's a fairly new concept, and there's not a very long history of how to do it. And the first 40 years of that were taken up by, shall I say, the solution to that was fixed pensions. When you retired from work, you retired from working for a company for 40 years and you received a fixed amount of money. However, over the last 30 years, companies have gone away from that and they've passed the responsibility on to individuals. And so here they are with a bucket of money, and they do not have the answer to the biggest three questions that they have that we get, which is, of course, do we have enough money built up to be able to stop working if we choose to? Because how can they know? How much can they afford to spend? And then finally, of course, how do they make it last? So it's a financial issue, I think, is the biggest one to start with, why most people pull their punches and they end up doing one of two things. They continue working longer than they need to because they don't have a formula to be able to determine if they have enough or not. Or worse, they end up stopping work, but then they pull their punches and they start acting like everybody else in society who says, well, gee, I'm on a fixed income now. I can't afford to do this. So it's sort of a societal problem that people love to talk about. So I think that's the financial side. There's another part of it, which I can touch on.
Before we get into the other side of it, what did people do before that? Because you said it's only the last 100 years or so, which I certainly recognize, and I enjoy the history of the financial markets quite a bit.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what people did before? Because obviously, this is a new thing.
There were two things. First of all, life expectancy was infinitely shorter. And so people worked until they passed away, or if they could no longer do so, they lived with their families and they were fully supported by their families. And so the whole phenomenon of being able to work. And if you put this into a philosophical, not a political realm, but if you think of what free market capitalism has done all over the world, it has created so much abundance that people are able to work and make significantly more than they need to meet their current needs. And that phenomenon has only been around for a little over 100 years in human history. And so that has led to folks being able to accumulate large sums of money, which they can turn around and live on, as opposed to having to work in order to do so.
Seems though the abundance is causing many challenges in our society as it benefits us in many ways. Obviously, it creates challenges because we're, I don't want to use the word lazy, but it makes us lazy. In the old days, you couldn't save because you didn't make enough. And so you figured out a way, lived with your family, and there was a strong family structure, maybe because you had to. And nowadays, you don't need that as much. So it seems to me, take the good with the bad.
It's a challenging habit to develop if you really think about it. How many are born and go to work and then immediately have it in their mind that they should only spend 80 to 85% of what they make and save the rest? They have to be taught that.
And I want to talk about the other side of it too. What's the other side that you mentioned outside of the financial part?
The other side that we see a lot with our folks is that the old school definition that society has painted, and it's not very attractive to them, which is the retiring and living in a hammock. A lot of the folks we meet have absolutely no desire to sit around in a hammock all day and do nothing. So the story that we see play out all the time in our office is a couple will come in who has done a great job of saving and accumulating over the years, and they're trying to determine if they have enough to be able to stop if they so choose to do so. And after going through all the steps in the program and designing a blueprint and everything that we do for them, we get to the point where if it works in their favor and we're able to demonstrate to them that they can afford to stop working tomorrow if they so choose to do so, I used to think that the balloons would start falling from the ceiling and the music would kick in and they'd run right out of the room and call up their boss or managing director and say, that's it, I'm finished. But the exact opposite is what happens in the majority of times. Usually what I hear is crickets. I hear silence. And the reason for this is that their goal isn't necessarily to stop working because their work brings them so much more than money. They want to know if they can afford to because they want to be in what we call the catbird seat where they no longer have to do anything anymore. But they're not looking to stop the next day. And really what they want to know is, can we afford to do that? And so what ends up happening as a result is they completely rearrange their life and reprioritize and get rid of all the things that they no longer want to do. And if one of those happens to be work, that's great. But in many cases, it's not that we find out. We find a lot of our folks continue to work well into their 60s and 70s, well past the time that they have to.
That's a good point you're making here. And why do you think that they choose to continue to work?
I think there's a lot of folks, and interestingly enough, those I find who have done the best job and have the most discipline are those who also are those who find the most enjoyment out of work. It's interesting that I'm supposedly in the business of helping everybody retire, and yet I never will by society's definition. And the reason for that is because I find so much enjoyment in doing what I'm doing. If I'm able to continue being on the schedule that I want to be on, why would I no longer want to do that? Doesn't make sense. And I think a lot of other folks, a lot of our folks feel the same exact way. If they're doing something that they really like, they've removed the bureaucratic part of what they do for business and all the things that they no longer want to do, and what they have left is what they love to do. Why would anybody no longer want to do that?
You raise a good point, because what people are doing is they're creating a habit, right? You work for 40 years in a profession, in a career, You're building that habit of going to work, you're providing for your family, And then all of a sudden you got to flip the switch and you got to retire and stop. A lot of people don't want to. It's the mental part of it. There's a lot of pieces to it. I appreciate you kind of bringing it up because it's really important.
Yeah, it's a weird feeling. I mean, most people just think it's weird, and inherently it is weird.
This is a bad analogy, but it's like you're married to somebody for 40 years and all of a sudden the person's living in the next door house and you don't see that person every morning and you're just like, what's going on?
Exactly.
Where's my spouse? Terrible example, but it's like you build this habit with something.
No, I think it hits home, and we see it so much when we see someone lose a spouse. It's exactly what you're describing. It's not as though they didn't love them and that didn't exist, but when they are no longer there, just the habit force of having somebody to converse with everything that they do in their life, when that's no longer there, well, there has to be a big void there. Has to be.
I forget which number it is, but it's got to be the top five most stressful moments in a person's life.
Oh, I believe so. Sure.
It's like moving a house, getting married, getting divorced, and changing jobs.
Absolutely. Stressful. We see it. We've been seeing it for years.
I know we're going to get into this in the panel portion of the show as well, but I want to talk a little bit about some of the other risks that people have in retirement. What are some of the biggest risks that people have as they get into retirement?
If you did a poll, my guess is you would find most folks discussing stock market volatility or healthcare costs and things of those nature. What we have found to be the biggest risk is actually the one that most people don't talk about, and that is to be able to maintain their purchasing power in a very highly rising cost world. And all of that starts with a few statistics that everybody always has to have in their mind. And the biggest one, most important one, is that the average joint life expectancy of a 62-year-old couple is 30 years. In other words, one of them is going to live to 92, and that's a long time. The problem, if we just use nice round numbers, even with modest 3% inflation, the 62-year-old couple who needs $100,000 over and above Social Security to live the exact lifestyle that they want is going to need $243,000 in their last year to support the exact same lifestyle. Not a better lifestyle, but the same. The 72-year-old couple is going to need $186,000 a year. And again, the easiest example of that, if you want, is just take a first-class stamp. If you go back 30 years, 31 years, in 88, the cost of one was 22 cents. Today, it's 55 cents. So that's a 250% increase to do the same exact thing, mail that same letter. So the biggest risk that we face is being able to have our income be able to continue to rise with those lifestyle costs. And the solution, of course, is owning assets that have a fighting chance of outpacing inflation. Most people are drawn to asset classes and investments that have no volatility to them. But unfortunately, those same ones are the same ones that are going to keep their assets so low that they're not going to be able to fight inflation and be able to maintain their purchasing power.
We're obviously in an interesting environment right now, because the same generation, the boomers, who kind of caused the markets to grow exponentially are now pulling their money out, and they're creating an interesting problem for themselves, because we have traditionally, as you get into retirement, you should be in probably lower risk investments. That's the traditional approach. But yet the lower, quote unquote, lower risk investments, or bonds, as people consider them, are paying a very low interest rate. So they're in an interesting predicament now, and maintaining that purchasing power is going to be really challenging, right?
Absolutely. We think the whole model that has been presented to everybody over the years is completely backward in terms of moving more and more toward fixed income. The biggest reason for that, of course, is longevity. So the traditional thought process is every year that you get older, then you should be going more and more fixed income. We don't believe that's the case. And the reason for that is that somebody is going to be living for a long period of time, and they have to own assets that have a fighting chance. And of course, that means equities. And the challenge, of course, with equities that most people find is the volatility. And I think part of the problem that they have with it is they don't really have a really good history or an historical perspective of what volatility really is and what the average length of time is that broadly diversified markets take to be able to fully recover themselves. It's actually quite fast. Most people, if they listen to the media, will get the impression that it's never going to ever recover. But if they do their homework, what they'll find out is that the recovery times are actually quite fast.
I think we can all hope for that, the next recession, whenever it happens to come about. Let's all cross our fingers and hope that's true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What they need is a working system of doing it. And I think that most people go at it without a system. They're looking for the magic pill. And they're looking for the one magic pill in order to be able to give them exactly what they want and have one answer that is going to do it. And there is no one answer.
We see that a lot here, certainly with our clients, and a lot of people think there's like an easy solution, and there really isn't. It's a combination of different solutions. And obviously, as markets change and times change, you have to adapt and come up with different scenarios, because just like we were talking about, traditionally, people invested in bonds. Well, if you're getting a negative interest rate in bonds, that's not very attractive.
Not attractive at all. And their chances right now in that low interest rate environment of being able to keep pace with inflation is zero. They have no chance.
So I appreciate you kind of bringing up that big challenge. What are some of the other ones? What about healthcare? Because that's obviously a big challenge, and the inflation rate of that is quite high as I read it.
Very high. It's more than twice the regular rate of inflation. The biggest challenge, of course, which was brought up by one of your previous guests, who was terrific, by the way, is that the biggest problem with that is the separation of consumers with actually what it is that they're paying. There is no pure marketplace for pricing, and so expenses are going up drastically. At the same time, though, I don't believe personally that healthcare costs are as scary as everybody is led to believe, and nowhere near the widespread panic that is out there as a result of the media. The first thing I would say about it is I don't think there's anything more important than your health. And so I think the problem is we've all been conditioned to believe that we don't, or that we shouldn't have to pay for that. And I personally believe that you should, and that everybody is entitled to be able to get whatever care that they can and should be able to fund it in the manner in which they do it. Really, what it comes down to is assessing the risk of care, of getting correct care over the rest of your life. Statistics tell us, Fidelity put out a study 2 years ago that said an average 65-year-old couple will spend $280,000 out of their pocket. And when the average person hears that, they get scared. And they say, well, that's an insurmountable number. We can't do that. That really is not true. And the reason for that is because Medicare covers a large percentage of what the predictable costs are. And then a properly selected Medicare supplement policy can take care of a large percentage of the rest. The key is you have to just treat it like a line item and go into the equation, not thinking that you shouldn't have to spend any money on it. It should be a large item of expense.
And I agree. And for the listeners who didn't hear it, the interview with Scott Heiser is what Jack was referencing.
Yeah,
just excellent. Talks about healthcare, which I think was excellent. I was really happy to get him on. But I mean, it's a huge topic. Even that interview doesn't do it justice because it's such a big topic and it changes. There's so many changes going on right now in the system. And a lot of people are trying to find solutions to a problem that is not a one-shot solution. Like, it's a system of solutions and many smaller solutions that need to take place.
That interview could have continued for 3 hours and you would have still kept everybody.
You know, sometimes our listeners will just say, sorry, it's too long. I won't listen. So maybe we'll have to have him back and have an extended version for everyone. But yeah, it was great talking to him.
Absolutely.
What about Social Security? If you're ultra wealthy, then you're probably not going to care. But for most of us, that's going to be a big part of our retirement. So what are your thoughts on Social Security? How should people be looking at that?
I think there's a couple of things to think about with respect to Social Security. First of all, for anybody who is within 10 years of the time that they're going to start taking it, I think they should feel very confident that the numbers are going to be pretty much what everybody says they are. For someone who's younger than that, they have to give some significant thoughts to that. However, coming back to Social Security itself, what they do have to pay attention to is not so much the amount that they're going to receive each year, or each month, shall I say, but what is the cost of living that has been promised to them, or the cost of living raise that has been promised to them? And a lot of that ties into when, in fact, they should start taking Social Security. And there's a bunch of issues surrounding that, meaning once you're 66 years old in today's day and age, and you've hit full retirement age, you're entitled to be able to collect your full benefit and still work and earn income outside of Social Security and still collect that full benefit. However, if you'd like to stop working and collect Social Security prior to 66, then there's a discounted formula where you're going to receive, not only are you going to receive less, but they don't allow you to earn as much money on the outside of Social Security. So there's some math that everybody has to give some significant thought to in terms of when they want to begin to collect Social Security. That's the biggest topic that I see.
We get that question a lot. Do you have any kind of rules of thumb for Social Security and when people should start collecting?
First of all, if in fact they are 66, that's pretty straightforward. They can begin. The big question comes is when they want to stop working completely, have no other income source from any other place in the world except for Social Security and then drawing down their assets. Should they begin Social Security then or wait until 66 or 70? And the numbers play out like this, because what you're doing by waiting until 66 instead of taking it at 62 is you're foregoing the amount of money that you would have received over those 4 years. And in order to make that back, once you then begin collecting at 66, you then have to live another approximately 14 years in order to break even. And so you've got to give some significant thought to what you believe is in your health history and how much longer you believe that you're going to live. And the second part of that is if you're not going to draw on Social Security over those first 4 years, is you have to then draw from your assets in order to support your lifestyle, because Social Security won't be there to take care of it. And remember that that money then is then gone. It will not go to your family when you're no longer here. So whenever someone is going to evaluate if they're going to start taking it 62 versus 66, there's a bunch of questions that they need to ask themselves, some of which are personal with respect to how they feel about their own personal life expectancy based on their own health.
We got to kind of wrap it up here in a minute, but anything else you think we haven't covered you think is really important for the listeners to know?
The biggest challenge I think that most people have is when they hit this stage in their life, they're looking to derive confidence and they don't know where to find it. And I think that in order for them to be able to derive the confidence, to be able to confidently spend their own money, there's a few numbers that they have to get a handle on. And one of the biggest ones is they've got to get a handle on what the rate of return is, the investment rate of return, and that they now must earn. And that's very different from the rate of return that you need to earn or that you want to earn. What I mean by that is two couples with the exact same amount of money in their retirement bucket, let's round number use $1 million. If the first couple spends twice as much money as the second couple, the first couple is going to need a much better rate of return on their money in order to make their money last. My recommendation is everybody's got to get a real handle on that rate of return. And that rate of return that they must earn is dictated by just how dependent they are or they will be on their retirement bucket when they go to retire. So spend as much time as humanly possible getting in touch with your numbers and knowing exactly what your dependence is going to be, not just the first year that you stop working, but 5, 10, 15 years into retirement.
I want to point out, you have your book, Relaxing Retirement Formula.
Yes.
What are the kind of things that people can learn from that book? I started to read it and it's pretty interesting. It's definitely different from some of the other books I've read.
Yeah, we walk through the whole process of being able to design a retirement blueprint. And if you think of where, if you're going to go about building a home, you can't just go out and start picking out kitchen counters and picking out your carpets. You have to take a gigantic step back and design it with a blueprint. And we take the same process for everybody when they hit that stage in their life, which we call the employment dependency threshold, which is when they're trying to evaluate if they have enough money to be able to support themselves without having to work anymore. So we walk them through the whole process of designing that. And the way in which we do that is they have to get very in touch, as we just talked about a minute ago, with what it costs them to live their ideal perfect lifestyle. So we have them sort of stand out 20 years, 25, 30 years into the future and look back and say, what are all the things that I'm no longer willing to do without? And what am I no longer willing to miss out on? And then we put a price tag on that. And so we walk them through that process, ultimately trying to determine how dependent they are on that retirement bucket, and then how they can allocate their resources that they have in order to generate the cash flow that they need, using historical precedent as their guide to be able to invest instead of following Wall Street myths of how it is that they should earn the rate of return that they need to get. And then the backside of that is, how do they access their money and how do they do so in a tax efficient manner so that they're not giving more money away to the government than they absolutely have to?
Where can people find more about you and your book? And we'll put the book in the show notes so everybody can find it. But why don't you kind of give people any kind of final things that they can learn about you?
They can visit theretirementcoach.com. We also have a suite of some of the retirement coaching tools that we offer in the book and checklists and resources for free. And they can get those on the book's website, which is theretirementcoach.com/formula. So it's theretirementcoach/formula. And they can just key in and download everything right from there.
So it's theretirementcoach.com?
Correct.
Great. Well, Jack, this has been awesome. I'm glad we had you on the show. And I know the listeners are going to get a lot out of this because we have a lot of boomers in the audience who are anxious about retirement and are looking for different ways to improve their experience. So thanks again for coming on the show, Jack.
Thank you. I appreciate being with you.
Have you ever heard a radio ad and thought, Wow, what a great idea. I really want to give all my money to a random stranger that I heard on the radio. Hey, you can't say that. Why not? People do it every day. Sure they do. But why are you pointing it out? Well, because some people never learn that lesson of not talking to strangers. This is a public service announcement. If you hear a radio ad that promises you 100% of return of gains with little or no risk, if you hear an ad that promises you easy money, or if it sounds too good to be true, well, it probably is. Do your own research or hire a professional. Either way, your money is way too important to your future to make hasty decisions. If you're experienced enough to do your own research, please spend the time. If you're not that experienced to do your own research, hire a professional. Someone experienced in providing investment due diligence, someone who is unbiased, and someone who's going to put your interest above their own. But if you don't know one of those people, you're in luck. Some of them are on this show as hosts and guests. Check us out each week to learn how to invest and protect your wealth. Oh, and remember to sign up for our new free report, The Top 10 Investing Myths That You Know to Be True But Aren't. This report is going to blow your mind. Go to moneytreepodcast.com/myths. Once again, that's www.moneytreepodcast.com/myths. Thanks again for listening, and remember to invest in your life. So that was a great interview with Jack Phelps. Now we're going to be moving into the panel portion of the show. Today we're going to be talking about retirement investing with our panel. And we have, once again, a great panel here. We have Miranda Marquette. How's it going today, Miranda?
Hey, doing well. How are you doing today, Kirk?
I'm doing just peachy. Doing great.
It sounds so convincing. I totally believe you.
I probably could have gotten a little more sleep last night, but besides that, I'm feeling great. Joys of raising children. And we also have Barbara Friedberg on the show. How are you doing, Barb?
I'm doing great. Hi, Kirk. Hi, Miranda.
Well, great to have you on the show as well. And I think we have a great panel to discuss this topic. And this is one of my favorite topics because it is something that I see very frequently in my practice. We have a huge segment of baby boomers coming through into retirement now that are really, this challenge needs to be addressed head on. And it's not always so simple. You know, Jack talked a lot about this in the interview, but it's not always so simple. It's not just about the numbers. It's also about the emotional side of money, which I think a lot of people really struggle with. And many of them don't even know they're struggling with this because they just assume it's normal. And this is a very addressable problem. So I really want to address it on this show. So starting with Barb, in your opinion, I mean, you write a lot about this topic as well as similar topics, but what do you see as some of the biggest issues of retirement?
Well, there's a whole host of issues. The scariest issue are those people that have started later. I got a letter recently from a 50-year-old woman who said, I'm just getting started saving for retirement. So that's one group. And for those people, you just have to really, really strip down your lifestyle and save as if your future depends on it and invest. But then there are the people that have met their retirement number or are on track, but are terrified of the idea of reversing the accumulation phase and stepping into the withdrawal phase of their lives.
Okay. What about you, Miranda? What are some of the big issues you see with people who are heading into retirement?
I think like Barb said, one of the biggest issues you run into is what happens when it's time to withdraw. You're so used to, saving, you're in this mindset where everything has to be save, save, save. And then what do you do when you withdraw? I think a lot of people worry too about the stock market and what happens if the stock market drops while I'm in retirement and how do I deal with that? And can I really keep pushing forward? And then a lot of people freak out and put everything in bonds or in cash and forget that they may need, you know, more growth in their portfolio because retirement is something that takes, it's longer, right? It's longer than it used to be. Longevity is a thing. So that's another problem I see.
Yeah. And I think that's another great point. And you kind of touched on this, and that's the inflation, right? We have the rising cost of inflation for certain things, like healthcare costs are skyrocketing compared to normal inflation. And I think that's a really important point that Jack had made. Like, we really need to be cognizant of the fact that we don't want to outlive our money. I mean, we don't want to leave our kids with millions and millions of dollars because we're eating cat food. But at the same point, we also don't want to run out. I think there needs to be a healthy balance there. But one of the things I wanted to talk about that both of you brought up was the kind of the emotional side of money. And Jack talked about this as well. You know, Barb, what are your thoughts on this? Because I know this is, you and I were talking before the show about this, but this is a really big issue. What do you see as some of the bigger issues when it comes to the emotional side of money with people retiring?
Well, as a baby boomer, I know this psychologically, and I also know it personally. I have all the data about how long my portfolio will last, and it's well positioned. There's minimal chance that I'm going to ever run out, and I understand the mechanics of it, but actually getting to a point sometime in the future where I'm going to have to draw on my investments is frightening. It is terrifying. And it's a totally and completely irrational fear. And so I think for many people, people that have done their homework, they've saved for retirement their whole lives, and they're pretty much set up, they're okay. There needs to be a psychological shift where you can accept the fact, okay, you're in a different phase of your life. Right now, you're going to hold either your net worth steady or it's going to decline somewhat. And you have to learn to embrace that as part of this epoch of your life and not define yourself by the balance that is in your net worth statement. And it's so much easier said than done.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. I mean, I talk to people from, let's say, different net worth spectrums. And it's funny because no matter who I talk to, whether you have $10,000 or $100 million, they all have kind of a similar mindset, which is if I only had 30% more, I'd feel okay. I think we as humans were not really designed to be comfortable with what we have. If people are trying to grow their wealth, it's really hard to flip that switch. It's really hard to change from growing and I feel like I need 30% more to be okay. Well, you're always going to feel that way. You're never going to feel like you have enough money. And I think your point's valid. And I'm glad we have you on this week, Barb, because as a firsthand experience as a baby boomer, a lot of the baby boomers are having this challenge of how do I flip this switch? Miranda, what about you? What are your thoughts on this topic from what you've seen?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people just say, oh, if they kind of get caught in this mindset of, you know, what you were saying, oh, if I had 30% more, like it would somehow magically be better. And the reality is we're kind of conditioned to think we don't have enough. We need a little bit more. If we just had this, we'd be okay. Just a little bit more. And really, you know, it comes down to taking a step back and saying, okay, do I have enough? What do I need to do to make sure I have enough? And, you know, realizing what Barb said, which is, you know, we're not going to keep increasing our net worth as we go along. We're going to start drawing that down and kind of making that shift and saying, and that's okay. A lot of us think, oh, well, if we're not growing our net worth, if we don't keep doing this or that or whatever it is, we're not okay. But the reality is it's okay. It's okay to start downshifting a little bit. And it's okay if we're not always growing our net worth.
Yeah. And I think it brings up an important point of getting back to the transition. Because I think all of us, especially the baby boomers, I mean, they worked really hard to save throughout the years. And you get to a point where you have to go from working hard and saving to no longer working and spending. That's not an easy shift to make. That's not something you can just make by flipping a switch and being okay with it. You've built up 40 years of habit. Your habit has been working hard. Your habit has been saving. And if you've been diligent enough to save, which, you know, not everybody does, but if you've been diligent enough to save, it's really hard to move to a different, you know, emotional state where you're okay with spending. Because part of the saving mentality is, you know, having that thrift and focused on saving first over spending, switching from that and that being a priority to now turning it off and spending, that's really hard. I mean, how do you feel about that, Barb? Because you're kind of going through that now.
You hit the nail on the head. I started at age 25 when I started, well, a couple years after I started working, I went to a retirement planning workshop. I was the youngest person in the room by decades. And I have been contributing to my retirement account for decades. And I've always been living underneath my income. It's just like you said, Kirk, it's a habit. And I'm really comfortable with that. I'm not a flashy person. I don't like to show off what I have. I like to get my needs met, spend on what's important. And the idea that it's okay maybe once in a while to treat yourselves or to spend a little more or to even live with the fact that, you know, you've got enough money to do what you want. It's very, very, very unsettling. I almost feel embarrassed to discuss it because it's really a wonderful problem to have. But on the other hand, for many baby boomers like myself who have been brought up, you know, our parents were of depression age. So we were brought up with that fresh in our minds that we have to conserve and to feel like, okay, well, yeah, you still want to live reasonably, but you don't have to put thrift above and beyond everything else. And it's very difficult to shift that mindset and feel like, look, money's a commodity. It's there to spend and to do with what you want. I always give a lot to charity because I feel like that's my obligation. But then the rest is I can spend something on myself. And it's not easy to shift that whole paradigm.
When we work with clients, we actually spend a good amount of time with clients who are approaching or in retirement, you know, going over the whole mindset part. Because what I find is, I'd say it's about at least 90% of our process is dealing with that. Because, you know, if you're in retirement, you either have the money or you don't. Like what Barb said, you know, some people are starting late and they have to really work hard to save more. But if you're approaching retirement and you're more or less where you're going to be in terms of net worth, then the mindset piece is important. And so we spend a lot of time with that because I find that if you have enough, or let's just say you're retiring and you decide, hey, I want to travel more, and you feel like you're still in this saving mindset, like you can't spend money, you feel like you're guilty for spending money, and you decide to go on a cruise, you're going to spend that whole cruise thinking about, oh, I got to save money. I can't spend this much. I'm not going to have enough in retirement. And you're not going to enjoy yourself. And I hear this over and over again from clients. I just retired, went on this trip, and I didn't enjoy it because I was thinking about all the ways that I needed to save so I didn't run out of money. And these are from people who shouldn't be worrying about that. The habit is really hard to break. So I think it's important that people spend the time before retirement or as they're approaching it to really focus on that. Miranda, you write a lot about these topics as well. Like, what do you see from people from this perspective?
Like you said, it's very similar, right? We feel guilty for spending money. We have a hard time enjoying when we spend money. We have this mindset that everything has to be saving money. And we just kind of forget that it's okay to enjoy life. And the reason why I assume we're saving up for retirement in the first place is so that we can enjoy life later. So it's just kind of interesting to me that we kind of get stuck in this. But yeah, I mean, I see very similar things, you know, and I get people that sort of frown on me for some of the ways like I choose to spend my money. But, you know, I'm meeting my goals. I should, you know, I've planned out how much I need. I've planned that out. I mean, my whole entire spending plan, the way I plan my money is, well, here are the things I need. I got to make sure I've got the housing, the shelter, donating to charity, putting money in my retirement accounts, putting money in my son's 529. Once all that stuff is taken care of, I just spend till it's gone each month. Like, you know, because I've taken care of my needs, I've taken care of my future security. Why can't I enjoy it now?
Well, I think that's actually a great point, Miranda, because I think a lot of people get stuck in this mindset of saving and they save way more than they need to and they don't enjoy the moment. And if you spend your whole life saving, it's important because you don't want to run out of money. I mean, none of us want to live off cat food and Social Security. But, you know, a lot of people, they forego the present for the future and you never really know what the future holds. So if you spend your whole life saving and you don't make it because, you know, you have a health problem or whatever, then you never really get a chance to enjoy it. And this kind of gets into another topic I wanted to ask about is the biggest risks. So each of you have some experience from writing about this. What do you see as some of the biggest risks that people can have as they're approaching retirement? What about you, Barb?
Well, there's a very classic risk that if there is a stock market drop, just as you're approaching retirement and you have to draw on your assets, that can cause a tremendous loss of income throughout your entire retirement. So a way to mitigate that is that as you approach retirement, it's advised to have, in addition to Social Security, a year or two of cash saved up so that you can use that for the additional spending that you need. Because that way you're immune. If the stock market falls, okay, so it falls, but you don't have to start drawing down your assets. You can relax and know that it will rebound at some point. Another risk is shooting for too low of returns. There's a common myth, and Jack talked about this, being all in bonds if you're in retirement. Well, today, we all know bond returns are terrible. The historical average is 5%, and we're nowhere near that today. So if you're looking at a 30-year retirement, you really need to keep a decent proportion of your assets in the stock market with the opportunity so that that money has an opportunity to keep pace and surpass the cost of inflation and grow more robustly.
Yeah, and that's a scary proposition that retirees have to be investing in the stock market at a time when it's at its all-time high. And at the same point, in bond yields are low. And it's really, if people want income, it's one of the few places they can go. That's a really scary proposition. And I don't know that everybody really truly understands how dangerous that can be. But I think it's a great point, Barb. And what about you, Miranda? What are some other risks that you see that people can have in retirement?
You know, we kind of touched on it a little bit earlier. I think one of the biggest issues you're going to run into is healthcare costs. Unless there are dramatic changes made to our system of healthcare between now and when you retire, your healthcare costs are going to be huge. I mean, they are. They're just going to be huge. Fidelity did a study a couple years ago, found that on average, retirees could expect to pay at least $100,000 out of pocket for their healthcare costs. So this is stuff that insurance doesn't cover, that Medicare doesn't cover, that Medicaid doesn't cover. This is stuff you can expect to pay out of your pocket during retirement. And I think a lot of people aren't planning ahead for that, which is one reason why I got to put in a plug for the good old HSA, the health savings account. I have a health savings account. I put money in it every month. I have the high deductible plan that helps qualify me for it. I don't use that money for today's healthcare costs. I pay for today's healthcare costs out of my pocket. I keep track of them. I don't have very many of them, but I pay for those costs out of my pocket today so that I can invest the money in my HSA and it can grow over time. And I can use that later as tax-free money to pay for healthcare costs during retirement. So basically, I use my HSA as a separate healthcare saving, retirement savings account, because I think healthcare is the biggest thing that people don't think about. We're kind of conditioned to think, oh, well, when I turn 65, Medicare will be there for me. Well, it's not going to cover everything. And healthcare costs are crazy. So unless something changes dramatically, I think that's going to be one of the biggest things you have to watch out for in retirement.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, Miranda. Yeah, we talked about that recently on the show with the HSAs, and I think it's one of my favorite types of accounts. I wish there were better resources around it, but it's a great way to save. There's one risk that we kind of touched on a little bit earlier, but I think it largely goes unnoticed with most people. What I see as one of the biggest risks, I mean, we could talk about healthcare costs, we could talk about inflation, we could talk about performance, or as Barb mentioned, sequence of return risks or things like that. But one risk I think a lot of people overlook is the risk of not doing something significant with your money. So if you've been fortunate enough and diligent enough to save $1 million, $2 million, whatever it is, and you have enough to retire, you don't have to be thrifty, but you can enjoy yourself. But I think what a lot of people do is they don't realize that, when you retire, if you're just focused on the same pattern that you had when you're working, then you miss the opportunities to do something significant with that money. Because if, let's say you retire at, let's say 70, to make the math simple, and you're going to live another, I don't know, let's say you live to 100. So you got 30 years in retirement. The first 10 years, probably you're going to enjoy the most. You're going to have a lot of mobility. You'll probably have the best health. You'll have a lot more opportunities to do things you enjoy. The second 10, your health may not be quite as good. You won't be able to travel quite as much. And the last 10, you're probably not going to enjoy much at all in terms of what you could have done in your earlier years. So it's not necessarily a straight line in terms of what you're going to be doing in retirement. What I think a lot of people do is they don't enjoy the fruits of their labor enough in their earlier years. And I think it's hard because not only they're going through this emotional transition of saving to spending, but they're also changing their life. You know, I don't know if anybody's seen that movie, Bucket List, but in some ways it's a great idea. We don't even call it retirement. If you want to talk about the kind of mental games we play with ourselves of how to change our mindset, we don't call it retirement. We call it phase two. We call it phase two of our life. And you have an enormous opportunity to do anything you want. And what do you want that to be? It doesn't mean sitting on a hammock and drinking beer and golfing all day, although that might sound like a good idea. I think that would get boring pretty quick. So we call it phase two because really you have an opportunity to do whatever you want in your life. And people really need to take that opportunity and run with it. And I don't think enough people do. In my viewpoint, that's what I see as one of the biggest risks of people not taking advantage of that huge opportunity in their life. Also wanted to talk a little bit about some solutions or strategies people can do to prepare better for retirement, because I think we talked a lot about the risks, but I know you both probably have some great strategies that people can use to prepare better. So what about you, Barb? What are your thoughts on how people can prepare better for retirement?
Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute, Kirk, but I need to respond to what you just said. I think I'm going to pull out my Rolodex and schedule an appointment with a therapist because I'm starting to panic.
Sorry.
No, that's good. I can do it in front of your millions of listeners now. Because, oh my God, now I've got to worry. Am I not going to make the most of my life? What am I doing wrong? How am I going to handle this transition? Am I going to be in the best life that I can? But I think theoretically, it's not a bad idea to have someone to talk to about these issues. And that's where a good financial planner would come in, or, you know, even a counselor, I think, because this is a real thing. But anyhow, okay, so back to your question, strategies about planning for retirement. I believe the first thing you have to do is prepare your mindset, because everyone is not like Miranda and me, who are very mindful of how they spend. Maybe they weren't raised that way. Maybe they didn't think about it. It wasn't important, whatever. But if you want to have a solid retirement future and build up some money outside of Social Security, then you really need to, I mean, Miranda outlined my most favorite way of budgeting, which is you really need to automate your investing directed into your retirement planning. HSA, I do the same thing that she does, use that as another retirement vehicle. If you can save in a Roth or an IRA as well, do that. You really need to max out your retirement savings. That's going to be the safest and easiest way to get to your retirement goal. And once you've got those transactions automated and they're out of your account and you've paid off your debt, and I can't stress this enough, if you can't afford to pay for something in cash right now, with the exception of your house, then you don't need it. Period. You need to change your mindset if you're one of those people that think, oh, I deserve it. I earn a good living. I can buy this. Well, maybe you can and maybe you can't, because if you want to spread out your income over your entire life, you're going to need to make some sacrifices during your lifetime. And as someone who has always lived with a mindset of spreading our family's income out over our entire lifespan, it's a habit, and you can create that habit. And if you do, your later self will thank you.
Yeah, that's great. I appreciate that, Barb. And I think it's an important lesson for everyone. I mean, we're talking about both sides of the coin here. You know, we're talking about flipping from saving to spending, but we're also talking about the importance of saving, because if you don't save it, you're never going to have it in retirement. And then you have a whole set of other problems you have to deal with. What about you, Miranda? What are some solutions or strategies that people can use to get ready for retirement?
It comes down to taking a step back and say, okay, what do I think I'm going to need? One of the first things I did was I sat down and I said, okay, let me look at a calculator to kind of calculate how my money is likely to grow in X amount of years. You know, I was very conservative about my numbers. I figured in as if it was only going to grow at a 6% annualized rate of return in stocks, which we know is probably very, very low. But that's how I did it because, you know, I'm boring that way. And so I just sat down and I actually wrote a whole thing. And I think it was a guest post on Barb's site once about how you can't trust the 4% rule. But I did kind of use that as a really loose gauge of like, okay, how much do I want in the nest egg to reach the 4% rule is kind of a loose gauge of where starting point is. I mean, all of these rules of thumb need to be tweaked to your circumstances. You really need to take a step back and think about it. But anyway, so I just kind of took a look at like, okay, how big do I want my nest egg to be? And how much do I need to put in each month to get to that goal? And I kind of worked backward from there with the help of an online retirement calculator. But then I also budgeted for other things. As many of our listeners know, I have a travel fund. I put money in a taxable investment account and I use that money for travel. I keep my long-term emergency savings in a taxable investment account. So, you know, I kind of figured that all out and just said, okay, what do I need to do to not only fuel like my future retirement lifestyle, but my lifestyle now? And what can I do to figure that out? And I think what it comes down to is taking a step back and being really brutally honest about the situation and working backward, as former co-host Joe Saul-Sehy says. You know, you start with the end in mind. You figure out what you want that end point to be and work backward and make a plan from there.
Yeah, and I think those are all great solutions and strategies people can use. And I love the fact that we did this show. I actually kind of annoyed at myself for taking so long to do this because this is such a huge topic and it's so important for a lot of our listeners who are in this point in their life. And we also have a lot of listeners who are, you know, early on in their career who really need this important advice. So Barb, what is some final words or thoughts that maybe we hadn't covered in the show that you want to cover?
Well, first off, I want to say I'm going to get Jack's book because it sounds like it's really good. Although I haven't read it, I think the more you can prepare and think about your future retirement when you're young and get started planning in your 20s or your 30s, the easier it is to get that taken care of. And so for those listeners that are young, make sure you are contributing the absolute maximum that you can to your workplace retirement account and or to IRA 401k or IRA or a Roth. So for younger people, get started now. It will be so much easier throughout your life to achieve your retirement goals.
That's great. And Barb, where can people find more about you?
You can come visit me at Robo Advisor Pros, where I help people get started investing by introducing them to automated investment managers who typically use best practices, investment strategies, and offer their platforms for very, very, very low fees. And they're ideal for both new and experienced investors. And I spend a lot of time teaching about that and providing a lot of reviews. So that's Robo Advisor Pros.
That's great. And thanks for coming on again this week, Barb. And Miranda, what about you? Final thoughts?
Yeah, just take a step back and figure out what you want from life and then figure out how to use your money as a tool to accomplish that. Yay. You know, we talked about it being phase two of your life. You talked about how retirement isn't like retirement anymore. Really, it's about like, what kind of life do you want to live and how do you get there? So check out MirandaMarkwood.com. I've got a great resources page where you can see all of the tools I use to manage my money to live the life I want. And I am on all the social medias.
Great. And thanks again for coming on, Miranda. Kind of my final thoughts is, you know, retirement is an important topic that everyone needs to spend some time with. What I've seen in my practice is not enough people spend enough time focused on retirement. They kind of figure it out later in the game. It's a lot easier to save starting early because you can accumulate more over time. So for our younger listeners, spend the time to plan out your retirement. I know it's going to seem weird because, you know, you're in your 30s and you're thinking about when you're 60s and 70s, but just start the habit of saving. Just start focusing on putting away a certain amount of money. Look at it as I'm going to save this money first before I spend it. Look at your saving as a monthly expense. Every month you got to put in $50 or $500 or whatever it is, and just force yourself to do that before you do anything else. That's important. And for the older listeners, obviously retirement is a little more timely for you, and it really needs to be addressed. So I would say this episode is actually a great episode. We talked about a lot of these issues, and there are a lot of concepts we talked about here, especially on the emotional side and phase two, which it's really important to spend the time. This is not something that happens. And I mean, when I work with clients, it's not something that happens in one meeting. It takes time. This is really deep stuff. It's habits take a little bit of time to break or to change. So it just requires intentional time on your part just to think about these things and to strategize. If you need help, certainly seek out a financial professional. They can help you, or at least ones that understand this concept can help you. And my name's Kirk Chisholm. I'm a wealth manager at Innovate Advisory Group. We don't just manage your wealth, we make your life better. You can find out more about me at innovativewealth.com. And of course, you can find me here every week on this show. So that's it this week for the show. Thank you for joining us on Money Tree Investing Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Play. You can check out our show on moneytreepodcast.com. On our website, you'll have access to all the resources, show notes, and archive shows. Lastly, please leave a show rating and comments on the podcast app of your choice. When you subscribe and rate to the show, it allows us to get better access to some of the top guests that you're going to want to hear. Have a great week ahead, and remember, no one will care about your money like you do, so invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.